This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here. Thank you.
Well, a lot of political stories on the front burner this week, so let's get right to them. Let's start with the midterm elections, 2010. One of the races that was supposed to be the easiest for the Republicans to win was in Florida with Charlie Crist. Now we're at the point where Marco Rubio has eclipsed him by so much. Charlie Crist is going to run as an independent, John. How does this shake up the race?
Governor Crist began a year ago as the overwhelming favorite to be nominated and elected to the United States Senate. And now the Florida governor, trailing Marco Rubio in most polls, has opted to switch and fight. Now, if this happens, one has to remember, Charlie Crist's problem within the Republican primary was his embrace of Barack Obama publicly, support of the president's stimulus package, and most recently vetoing SB 6, a measure passed by the Republican-controlled legislature that would have had more discipline and accountability for state teachers. And he vetoed that, won cheers from the teachers and boos from fellow Republicans. He is clearly positioning himself to move to the left. I would tend to agree with the Rasmussen poll, which gives Rubio a lead in the three-part race. Crist second place, and Congressman Kendrick Meek, Democrat, third.
So even with two Republicans essentially on the ballot, the Democrats won't be able to win this?
No, I don't think so, because remember, Crist's problem and the reason he's going rogue is because he was perceived as a less-than-conservative Republican. I would imagine in cultivating teachers as well as liberal support, he'll continue to move to the left in the campaign and probably have to say some unkind things about the party he's leaving. That said, November's a long way off, and someone who runs as an independent, if he can still raise money from new sources and he is a sitting governor, could be very formidable. One person has already said he'd send him a check, former Democratic National Chairman Howard Dean.
John, let's talk about another major race before we get to what's going on here in Congress, and that's, of course, the British elections coming up next week, early next month. May 6th is the date to see which party will control the House of Commons. It's now a three-person race. Essentially, it used to be a two-person race with the Liberal Democrats kind of as an entertaining sideshow. But now, as a result of these debates, it's very much a three-party race. You previously predicted the Conservatives will regain control. What do you think now?
I do think the Conservatives will regain control, but David Cameron will become Prime Minister by a whisker, not with a resounding margin, as Margaret Thatcher did in 1979 when she led the Conservatives to power, or Tony Blair did in 1997 when Labour came into 10 Downing Street with a rump. He has not fared as well as his advance reviews. In many ways, he's the British Fred Thompson. In addition, Nick Clegg, leader of the Liberal Democrats, is a very adept and friendly television performer. That said, I talked to two colleagues from the BBC last week who point out that the vote for the Liberal Democratic Party will be concentrated in a few constituencies. And while they may do very, very well in the election nationwide in terms of getting votes, their number of seats in Parliament will not reflect it. Britain, remember, is not, as the Liberal Democrats would want, proportional representation, but first past the post. I'm still saying, combine that with the fact that third-party candidates in a two-party society usually fail at the end and run out of gas, that Cameron will be a narrow winner. And, of course, Gordon Brown did not help himself with his remarks to that lady about being bigoted.
John, let me circle back to one other midterm story that's coming up before we get to Congress, and that's the Indiana Senate primary coming up this coming Tuesday, May 4th. It seemed that the Republican darling was Dan Coats, the former holder of that very seat, who retired back in 1998. Since that time, however, of course, you've had John Hostetler, the former congressman, enter the race, as well as Marlon Stutzman, a state lawmaker who has gotten the backing of a lot of Tea Party folks. Who do you like on Tuesday?
Well, I like all of them, actually, and I think it's healthy when Republicans have a competitive primary, when they don't see bad things about one another, and disparate factions of the Republican Party are represented honorably, as all three of the candidates you mentioned have done. I would tend to feel that Dan Coats, who's getting most of the endorsement of regular party leaders, is looked at fondly in the state, will emerge as the winner. And in that case, we'll beat Brad Ellsworth, who cast a deciding vote in favor of the health care bill, has voted for stimulus packages, has been turned on by many who felt he was a pro-life Democrat. But I would have to say that very possibly Dan Coats will be the winner in a harder-than-expected race on Tuesday and a big winner in November. We'll find out.
John, it seemed as though the Senate Republicans were standing united against allowing the debate to get to the floor this week on the Democratic version of financial regulatory reform. Three times Democrats tried to begin debate, three times denied, not only with all the Republicans voting against it, but also Nebraska Senator Ben Nelson. Then Wednesday evening, lo and behold, a deal is struck. The debate has begun. What will happen?
Well, again, the debate has begun, but the controversy over the measure and what it could possibly do to business, as well as its empowering of the Federal Reserve Board to do things that were never expected, are going to be the subject of considerable questioning in the United States Senate. I might add that very much like the health care bill, this is long. Senator Dodd's version is 1,300 pages long. And to use an old saying, the devil is in the details. Ben Nelson should have known better, in my opinion. One has to stop it. I have to say, as an old political reporter, certainly the testimony of the Goldman Sachs executives did not help the case at all. And Wall Street looks very bad right now. I think that's why the Senate might have moved on it. But amendments can still be offered. There is more debate. And the final version of the bill is not in concrete by a long shot.
John, one of the things that happened here is that Harry Reid said, we're going to have an all-night session. They brought in the cots for the photo opportunity. And, of course, the Republicans were derided as being the friends of Wall Street. Republicans have said the same about the Democrats. But do you think the Republicans have the stomach, if they don't like the final version of this bill, to actually stop it? Or will the pressure from the media and from the Democratic majority cause them to wilt?
Well, remember something. Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, who testified yesterday, said that he is actually in favor of the bill. I don't know where Fabulous Fab came down on it, but and Citigroup also supports the Dodd bill. The voting public is not pleased with what they've heard right now, and I think Republicans can defeat it, amend it, water it down, or just get a bill that really does good things in the long run. Also remember, the public is a little fed up with long and complex bills that are trying to be rushed through office at this point. Witness the low approval rating for the health care bill, and that doesn't even take effect for another 4 years.
John, about 30 seconds left to talk about the World Bank and IMF meeting here in Washington last weekend, with Greece mainly on the agenda.
Yes. Greece was mainly on the agenda, and the news that's now leaking out of the Ice Palace, or the Glass Palace, I should say, on Pennsylvania Avenue, is what was assumed during the meeting but never actually confirmed. Another bailout package for Greece, which made a big mistake in its bookkeeping. That's going to be the principal role of the IMF. Interestingly, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the managing director of the IMF, is now pushing a bank tax. A global bank tax that would be imposed on major institutions around the world, presumably as a way of checking a collapse of banks in the future. Well, a lot of people are a little nervous about paying an international tax to a body that most of their citizenry is unfamiliar with. Jim Flaherty, the finance minister of Canada, spoke out against this proposal, butted heads with Mr. Strauss-Kahn a number of times. And I think this is going to be a subject of major debate in international finance, as well as a very defining moment in the future of the IMF and its authority.
Yeah, paying international tax is probably not real high on most people's agenda. John, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for your time.
As one who thinks that paying any taxes should be a subject of questioning and on the table, I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.